It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The battle of Ohio's wayward primary is now more about the courts than the campaigns. Voting's been extended into the uncertainty of the next 11 weeks as a push to shorten that time frame begins. Here's the way it looked Monday, right before the governor stepped in to hit the pause button. Here's the way it looks 24 hours later, as desolate and deserted as much of the community and country.
We did receive calls from voters who were concerned about going to their polling place on Election Day, and now they have the option of voting by mail.
But 70% of county voters prefer what they don't have this time, in-person voting. For candidates such as these two Democrats who want to unseat Republican Steve Chabot, it's a day to regroup.
It's an emotional roller coaster as a candidate.
Former soccer player Kate Schroeder likens it to kicking the winning goal only to be told the game will be extended.
That's a little bit about what's happening now. Like, the momentum and the energy is changing, but that doesn't mean that we can't keep playing, and we will play under whatever the new rules are going to be.
Being a military veteran, you pick yourself back up and you say, all right, what's next?
All-American Air Force rugby player Nikki Foster has told her campaign team it's next step time.
It's okay to be afraid, but it's also important that you follow safety precautions and that we move forward as a community and as a country together. And now more than ever, we need leadership like that.
Votes already cast that were to be counted tonight will be safeguarded until June 2nd and tallied then, at least as things stand now.
I can tell you, as a party leader, I wanted this primary to be over, and so did my counterpart in the Democratic Party. You want to coalesce around your candidates.
And so when those votes are counted on June the 2nd, along with others that will be counted, will be absentee ballots that are received between now and June 2nd, and in-person voting on June 2nd, if that actually occurs. Reporting live, John London, WLWT News Live.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That is a really interesting thing that happened just, what, not even 2 weeks ago, when the governor of Ohio suddenly canceled the primary. That one of the voices that you heard there was Amy Acton. She was the health director who basically predicted that 100,000 Ohioans would die of coronavirus. And so Governor Mike DeWine responded and canceled that because out of some fear that people would be in danger if they came to vote on that primary day. We find out, by the way, as we have learned more, Amy Acton, who was chosen by Mike DeWine, was an Obama supporter. We also know that while she said on her application that she was not pro-choice, pro-abortion, she, in fact, is very pro-abortion. So, and then she said to later that she had just guessed about the 100,000. After the election was canceled and she was pressed on that, she had just guessed about that. So the question is, an obvious question, how is the coronavirus going to affect the 2020 election? It has already affected it. In what ways could it be good? In what ways could it be bad? I can't think of two people any more equipped to talk about this than my next guest. They're well known to you because they're frequent guests on this show. The first one is J. Christian Adams. And, of course, Christian fills in for me sometimes at this microphone. I'm always so happy when he does that. Christian is the president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation, and he's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Injustice. He also was a former Justice Department lawyer. Christian, thanks for joining us this morning. And let me just ask you right up front, what are you working on right now? Just a touch. What are you working on right this minute?
Well, we're looking at a number of things. For example, last week was consumed with stopping the effort by Nancy Pelosi to have a federal takeover of American elections. This week, we're working on dealing with these lawsuits by a variety of leftist interest groups to force states to change how they run their elections before November.
Wow. And we're going to get into some of that, Christian, because it is so complicated. And that's the reason we're talking this morning. Joining Christian, of course, is These guys are comrades in the battle, I'll tell you. Hans von Spakovsky is an expert on civil rights, civil justice, immigration, the rule of law. He writes all the time about our elections. In fact, he was just on with us recently talking about whether the president could cancel the 2020 election in November. The answer is no, by the way. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and also the manager of the Heritage Foundation's Election Law Reform Initiative. Both Hans and Christian served on President Trump's Election Commission. They were appointed right after he was elected in 2016. And then, of course, their group, which was so powerful, was shut down by the left in so many insidious ways. But Hans joins us this morning, too. Hans, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on, Sandy.
All right, let me ask. We started out with that clip, Hans, on Ohio delaying their primary.
Right.
So I just, in general, what do you think? I mean, is there any way to sort of think ahead and figure out what the effect of delaying a primary like that might be?
Well, delaying a primary potentially can help the candidates who don't look like they're going to win, because what does it do? It gives the candidates that are behind more time to try to reach voters and convince them that they are the person that should be voted for. And I'll give you a quick example of that. I think a lot of people forget that on September 11th, 2001, when New York City was attacked, that was actually the date of a statewide primary in New York. And one of the candidates who was running in the mayoral primary for New York was somebody who was a relative political unknown named Michael Bloomberg. And they put off the election. It had already started, the primary election already started that morning. They stopped it a couple hours into the voting, put it off. And there are some people who credit that delay in giving Michael Bloomberg more time to convince people to vote for him.
Hans, so far, what states, I have lost track. I really have. The other states have delayed their primaries, have they not? And some are considering it?
Yes, yeah, so there's at least 12 states, I think, plus Puerto Rico, that have delayed and put off the date of their elections and are figuring out what to do about it. As an example of this, Georgia, for example, has announced that it will be sending absentee ballot request forms to every registered voter in the state. So that'll give folks the ability to fill out the form, mail it back, and get an absentee ballot to vote in their June primary.
But Hans, I want to get into this. I should ask you this, Christian. An absentee ballot request form, is there an ID requested for that? Now, I know that you're more of the legal part of this, and perhaps that's not the question for you, but do you know the answer to that?
Well, Georgia, you can't really ask for an ID, as far as I recall, Hans, on the request form. They aren't requiring you to send a photo ID.
No, but Kansas, for example, they actually apply their voter ID law to their absentee ballot. And one of the lawsuits that Christian was talking about that's being filed by the left, they're trying to use the coronavirus scare to get rid of all the things they don't like. And so, for example, Wisconsin, which has a primary coming up, is one of the states where, in fact, the ID requirement applies to absentee ballots. And you're supposed to send in like a photocopy of your ID. And one of the lawsuits they have filed is to convince the courts to get rid of the ID requirement for absentee ballots in the upcoming primary.
So we see where this is headed, and that's the reason we're having this discussion. Just another process thing, and Hans, delaying the conventions, what effect? I mean, I think Donald Trump is the official nominee for the Republicans, I believe, but who would know? But there is no official nominee for the Democrats. Is that correct?
No, but the second runner-up, Bernie Sanders, has not yet withdrawn from the race, even though just about everybody says that he doesn't have a chance of winning enough delegates to catch up with the former vice president.
Well, so delaying the conventions, which I, honestly, I think the Democrats are not planning. I don't believe they have delayed theirs. I'm not sure about the Republicans. What would be the potential? I know I'm asking you to game something, but do you? What do you think the potential effect of doing that would be?
Go ahead, Christian.
No, no, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think it's going to have any effect on who each party selects. I think it's 100% certain, of course, the Republicans will nominate President Trump. I think it's, 95% certain that the Democrats will nominate the former Vice President, Mr. Biden. The only thing that may cause a little bit of a problem if they delay their convention is the fact that some states have laws that say that the parties have to notify a state election official who their nominee is, who's supposed to be, who will then be listed on the ballot, and it's based on the party conventions doing an official nomination process and then notifying the state. So if they delay the convention, they may be missing some of the deadlines states have imposed to get the name that's supposed to be on the ballot. Now, I assume that the state may act quickly to waive those deadlines, but that's really the only issue that I can see being a problem. And in fact, the Republican convention, is so late this year already, end of August, that Alabama, actually the legislature, changed its law to set that deadline 2 weeks later than it is, because otherwise the convention date would have they would have missed the deadline in Alabama.
Oh, interesting. Christian, your thoughts about that? Just what kind of things can you foresee about the outcome if a delayed conventions took place, or if there's some kind of messing around? Now, I guess what comes to my mind is that the Democrats, I think, would like not to have Joe Biden as their nominee. I could see them using this situation in any way possible to sort of change that. I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
Well, the other issue that you have, Sandy, is it bumps up against the deadline to mail military ballots out. States have to mail military ballots out in advance, and that's not always easy to do. And they need to actually have those ballots printed well before the time period for regular voting. And so this really delayed conventions bump up against military ballot mail-out deadlines.
So there's all kinds of things that are possible. Because if military ballots, and they would, I wonder, would they change the regulation so that they could be counted later? Would they change the date? And who would do that? That would have to be each state, right? Treating it differently.
It would be, although, as Christian said, and the states have to keep in mind, there's actually a federal law that requires absentee ballots requested by overseas military personnel to be sent out 45 days prior to the election. And the point, as Christian said, is it takes a while to print all of those ballots. So state election officials, they've got to know as soon as possible by the end of the summer who the candidates are going to be so they can go through the process of getting those ballots printed up and then mailed out to military folks all over the world so that they don't miss their chance to vote in the election.
Well, my guests are J. Christian Adams of Public Interest Legal Foundation and also Hans von Spakovsky of Heritage Foundation, both of them experts on elections and what are happening. We didn't even talk about what should happen if by chance COVID-19 should last through November. I don't think that's going to happen, but interesting to think about it. When we come back, let's talk, you guys, about what the Democrats' wish list for our voting process and how they almost got it into the coronavirus package. Let's talk about that next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
For our democracy, we ensure that states can carry out this year's election and require early voting and vote by mail.
That's Nancy Pelosi. That's her wish list. Early voting and vote by mail, and that's not all she wants. Kevin McCarthy was talking about what Nancy Pelosi tried to get into the coronavirus bill, and this is what he said.
99% of this bill was already decided on Sunday. She held the bill up. And look what we just found out today. Almost 3.3 million Americans just lost their job last week. While she was holding this bill up, for why? Because she wanted to change election law. She wanted Planned Parenthood to be funded. She wanted the Green New Deal, and she wanted more money for sanctuary cities. That's what she was requesting. That's what we kept out of it.
All right, so that was Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House in Washington. And we know, we talked about this a lot last week. I had you calling your senators to stop what Nancy Pelosi was trying to get in the bill in regard to voting. So Hans von Spakovsky and J. Christian Adams are my guests, both experts on voting. And let's talk about the bullet that we dodged, at least in that bill, but it's coming up. This has been a wish list of the Democrats since they first took the House, as I understand it. Hans, why don't you talk about that? We've known for a while that this was what they wanted when it came to voting in America. Kind of lay it out if you could.
Sure. They basically took all these provisions that were in H.R. 1. H.R. 1 was the very first bill introduced in the House after they took over subsequent to the 2018 election. And it was basically a federal takeover of state and local election administration and all these federal mandates. And the Pelosi coronavirus bill, for example, would have outlawed any ID requirements for absentee ballots, any witness requirements, you know, having to have a witness on your signatures. It legalized vote harvesting all over the country. So states that ban vote harvesting, in other words, the ability of anybody to pick up your ballot, including candidates, that now would have been legal all over the country. And it was just one thing after another like that. One of the worst was, and think about how this would allow candidates to potentially manipulate election results. Look, absentee ballots are voted all over the country. People who are sick, disabled, use those. But states say we won't start processing and counting those ballots until the end of election day, when they are counted the same as in-person ballots. And the reason for that, obviously, is you don't want early results being leaked out so the candidates can change what they're doing, or the public is deterred from voting because maybe their candidate is behind. Her law said states would have to start processing and tabulating ballots 2 weeks before election day.
Wow. None of that made it into the process, and that's in small part, due to the work of both of you, writing and talking and doing interviews and also lobbying, advising people in power not to allow this to take place in the bill. I'm surprised, actually, you guys, because they didn't stop hardly anything else in the bill. Well, that's not true. I guess the Green New Deal provisions, but they allowed so many other bad things, but this they pushed back. Christian, I know that you credit a couple of staffers in McConnell's office, and I don't often credit McConnell with anything, so I should just pause for a minute and let you talk about what happened there.
Well, it's true. Thank goodness Mitch McConnell is the majority leader in the Senate and Donald Trump is the president in the White House, because there are some other Republican presidents and some other senators in the Senate who I don't think would have been as solid on this. These folks understood that the Democrats were using this crisis to take over elections from the states, to use federal mandates to dictate how we elect the president, with weeks of early voting, with absentee ballots that are notoriously subject to fraud, with a mandatory same-day voter registration in 50 states, the thing that got Norm Coleman thrown out of the Senate and replaced with Al Franken because of voter fraud, same-day registration. So they used this crisis, or they tried to change everything, Sandy, about how we elect presidents. So beware, I don't think Nancy Pelosi is quite yet finished with this, because the left and the Democrats are completely obsessed with changing these process rules.
I think, you know, the whole issue of voter ID people understand very clearly, but Christian, you've done a lot of work in the field on this whole business of voter harvesting, and I don't know that people fully understand what that is. Tell us what it is and what you have seen is happening in various states.
Right, and look, I talk about a case. I actually had a federal court trial when I was at the Justice Department as an attorney. We were investigating a political machine in Noxubee County, Mississippi, that was using absentee ballots as a way to hold on to power. And they would go, these notaries, these harvesters would follow the postal truck, and they would grab absentee ballots out of mailboxes. They would knock on the door and ask the person, and they would vote the ballots for the voter. The voters weren't casting the ballots, Sandy. It was the harvesters themselves. And this wasn't speculation. This isn't a conspiracy theory like magazines like the New York Magazine call what Hans and I write about. This was proven in court that the ballot harvesters were casting the ballots of people, sealing the envelope, and then taking them back and keeping the political machine in power. And that's why absentee ballots are the worst form of election, and we should do everything we can to have oversight of the election and not be voting in people's kitchens where the vulnerable and the poor can be coerced behind closed doors.
And Andy, listen, Christian is describing, look, the same thing happened it just recently. Remember, in North Carolina, in the 2018 election, the only contested congressional race in the country was the 9th congressional district in North Carolina.
Yeah, Mark
they
Harris.
Banned vote harvesting there. Despite that, a political consultant with a notorious reputation was working for one of the candidates there, and that election was overturned because that candidate, political consultant and his staff were going out collecting absentee ballots from voters, oftentimes before they'd even been filled out, sometimes hadn't even been signed. But, of course, the ballots, by the time they got to election officials, had been signed and the votes had been cast. And it was very clear that they were forging signatures, fraudulently altering the ballots. And that, look, that only happened 2 years ago.
Yeah, didn't that happen in California also in a recent election? I remember hearing stories about people. I just remember this was big news, but, you know, it's all just it becomes one big memory. But I thought it happened in California pretty recently also. Not 2018, but before that. I guess that's not so recent. I wanted also the same-day voter registration, why is that so bad? Explain why that is so bad and how it's abused.
Well, Sandy, the problem with it, there's not time to verify validity. And in other words, for folks who don't live in the state with same-day registration, here's how it works. You're not registered to vote. It's election day. You walk into the polls and you say, I'm here to vote. I'm here to register. And they just sign you up right there. And there's no chance to verify that you're actually a citizen, even a citizen of the state. You live there. And they hand you a ballot and you cast it. And they're supposed to go check afterwards, but we know that in places like Wisconsin, we found through a public records request with the Public Interest Legal Foundation, that they were just ignoring this provision of state law, that they were trying to validate these people after the election. They just blew it off. They didn't do what they were supposed to do. So it basically creates a vulnerability in the system where non-residents and the ineligible, such as felons, are allowed to dictate the outcome of elections, and there's nothing we can do about it. It's a big, giant vulnerability, and that's exactly why the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi wanted it as a federal mandate.
Yes, Sandy, there are specific examples, too. For example, there was a case in Wisconsin, which has same-day registration some years ago, of two union guys who were just in the state temporarily to work on the petition to withdraw the governor of the state, and they same day registered and voted, listing their motel as their residence address. And in the 2004 election in Ohio, which also had same day registration at the time, a number of staffers for John Kerry, who were just temporarily in the state to work on his campaign did exactly the same thing.
Very alarming. So that helps us to understand. And it's hardly to unring that bell. We already have enough porous methods in our voting that we have so much potential for fraud. I know you guys have been talking about that. Isn't it interesting that Barack Obama chose to mock that whole notion that there was any voter fraud in this country? And he got away with that. The left said that was silly. Is it silly, Christian?
Well, of course not, but that's what they do. They mock. I mean, you know this, Sandy, that if you disagree with somebody, the first Alinsky tactic is ridicule. It's man's most potent weapon, as Saul Alinsky said. So what they do is they characterize Hans and I as either vote suppressors or coming up with the myth of voter fraud. Look, there is a whole industry with hundreds of millions of dollars behind it, Sandy, and I don't overstate, funded by groups like the Tides Foundation, Open Society, Democracy Fund, that is aimed at hiding the existence of voter fraud. They have writers on the payroll. They have lawyers on the payroll. Anytime somebody tries to do something about voter fraud in court, they hire lawyers to intervene to stop it, to try to stop it. It is an all full court press to hide the existence of criminality in our elections. And you have to wonder, why are they willing to invest so many millions of dollars to hide crimes?
You know, it would be interesting to interject just in the minute that we have before this break. What can you guys recount what they did to shut down your commission? Just bullet points, Hans?
Well, let me handle that, Hans, because I just read a piece today in New Yorker Magazine, or New York Magazine, Zach Roth at the Brennan Center wrote a piece who said that the commission was shut down after finding no significant evidence of voter fraud. Well, that's a lie. That is a lie, because we were never even given the opportunity to find any evidence of voter fraud. We faced 12 federal lawsuits seeking records. When Hans and I would send an email to each other and other commission members, it would be leaked within an hour or two when I suggested that we have voter fraud prosecuted. So, Sandy, it is an absolute lie by people like Zach Roth to say that no evidence of voter fraud was found. It's because we never got even a chance to look.
Hans, anything to add to that?
No, he's right. Those lawsuits were filed, most of them frivolous, meritless lawsuits, in order to prevent us from being able to do our work, and they were successful because the staffers and the vice president's office assigned to this spent all of their time working with Justice Department lawyers defending the suit and had no ability to actually work on what we were supposed to be doing, which was investigating the vulnerabilities of the American election system.
And of course, President Trump felt that many votes that were cast for him were not counted. I think he understood voter fraud, and he wanted your commission to figure out what exactly happened in 2020, but we still don't know. Do we know? Do you guys have any idea? Or is it just a hunch?
We don't really know, because we weren't able to do the nationwide study. We do know from the work we've done, particularly the work done by Christian's organization, of problems all over the country, very specific problems of things like non-citizens who are illegally registered and are voting in elections, or from the database at the Heritage Foundation, where we're now up to almost 1,300 proven cases of voter fraud from across the country.
And Sandy, I can report here, possibly for the first time, that the Public Interest Legal Foundation has just completed a massive data study of the whole country, more or less, of voter fraud in the 16 and 18 election. Not through speculation or statistical modeling and all of sort of some of the crazy methods that have been used to estimate voter fraud, but by actually looking at the voter rolls. And we have found, for example, husband and wife teams voting twice. And you know they're committing fraud because they're doing it in a state like Connecticut and a state like North Carolina simultaneously. We have found thousands of instances of dead people casting ballots. We have found instances of people voting multiple times in one state. As a matter of fact, we're suing Allegheny County, which is Pittsburgh, because they don't have clean voter rolls. They have one person registered to vote, Sandy, seven times. Seven. Not two, not three, but seven. and he was registered right before the 16 election by leftist third-party groups out of Colorado. Like, every day he would fill out a different voter registration form, and they all got approved. They're all active registrations in Pennsylvania.
So can anything be done about that, Christian? I mean, that's what you're doing. You're bringing lawsuits in those cases, right?
Yeah, we're suing the city of Detroit right now because they have thousands of dead people on the rolls. We're suing Allegheny County, which is Pittsburgh, because they have the same problems there. And so we're trying, but the problems are in every state almost, particularly swing states like North Carolina has shocking problems. Florida has problems. Even Texas has problems.
Wow, we'll come back and talk about it. We'll talk about it. My guests, of course, are J. Christian Adams and Hans von Spakovsky. Two real champions. They've really taken a lot of hits. They're not even talking about. They've really put their money where their mouth is. They are really dedicated to saving this country in whatever way they can. And so I just want us to talk a little bit more when we get back where the hot spots are for the upcoming election, what the left is pushing now. And Christian's already mentioned some of the things they're doing, but they're up to much worse. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The supervisor of elections tells me that someone who works for a group that does voter registration drives submitted over 100 fraudulent applications. This news coming one day before early voting kicks off here in Lake County. Lake County Supervisor of Elections Alan Hayes says his office has been victimized by someone submitting fraudulent voter registrations.
At this point, we have identified 119 applications that appear to be false. We have turned these documents over to the Sheriff's Department.
Hayes says last Tuesday they got calls from voters who'd received new voter registration cards reflecting a party change, which the voters had not made.
This is the whole stack right here.
Further investigation revealed over 100 fraudulent applications. He says the majority requested a change from no party to Republican or from Democrat to Republican. Investigators believe the paperwork was filed by a field worker for a third-party voter registration group. They say most of the documents were turned in to the Seminole County Supervisor of Elections and forwarded to Lake.
We have identified an individual who we believe is responsible, and we have been working closely with the state attorney's office to obtain an arrest warrant.
Officials say the voter registration organization has been cooperative. They would not yet identify it or the suspect. Hayes says most of the fraudulent paperwork was flagged by the system for having unverified information, and those voters may have gotten a letter in the mail but won't experience any change with their ballot or registration. He estimates about 20 to 30 voters may find at the polls their party affiliation was changed, but says plans are in place to ensure they are given the ballot they desire.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was just recently in Lake County, Florida, right before their primary. And so you see there are active efforts right now to steal the election in various ways. My guests are J. Christian Adams and Hans von Spakovsky, both experts in this field. You guys are on to some other, like, even more insidious interference with election, and it has to do with something you just discovered recently. Christian, tell us about it.
Well, look, last week, everything hung in the balance. Nancy Pelosi was trying to pass federal mandates in the coronavirus bill to essentially take over state control of elections on at least three very important points: how you vote, when you vote, and when you're able to be, register to vote. And we discovered, lo and behold, that Michael Steele, the former RNC chairman, and another group called R Street was publishing op-eds saying, we need to do this, right? And I thought, well, that's interesting. And, of course, it's bad policy. But the real insidious part of this is that a group like R Street, who shouldn't even be in this space, but certainly, for the folks who don't know, there's purportedly a conservative or libertarian organization. Well, my goodness, this is not a conservative or libertarian position. But what's even worse
is the groups funding them are things like the Tides Foundation, the Open Society Institute, the Democracy Fund. All of them are hardcore leftist funding sources that gave to the tune of $1.5 million, Sandy. So that's how bad it is, that even groups who claim to be conservative or libertarian are doing the work of the institutional left to try to have federal takeovers of our election.
Hans, this is not the first time we have known of conservatives. This is what the left does. They peel off people who are supposed to be conservative. They do it over and over again. It's, I guess it's a tactic that I can't verbalize, but it's neutralizing. What are your thoughts about what R Street has just done? This conservative, they've taken money from these leftist organizations and then come out in favor of Nancy Pelosi's proposal for that bill. Your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, the worst thing about that editorial, the commentary that they published, was this totally ridiculous claim that there's no need to worry about voter fraud with absentee ballots. And, you know, that report you just played about the county in Florida. Listen, not too many years ago, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement issued a report on absentee ballot fraud in Florida. And it detailed case after case after case of absentee ballot fraud in counties throughout the state, including, by the way, the 1997 mayoral race down in Miami, Dade County, that was overturned by a federal judge because of massive fraud. The judge there estimated that there were something like 5,000 fraudulent absentee ballots cast. And that's why all these pushes by everyone from Nancy Pelosi to the Brennan Center and all these other left-wing groups to get rid of the security measures that have been put in place to try to prevent that from happening with absentee ballots is just a terrible idea, one that will risk the security and integrity of the election process.
Well, I think one thing we have to that I need to interject right here, just a reminder of what you both said. Christian, you certainly landed on this hard, and that is that we did dodge a bullet in Nancy Pelosi's amendments or additions to the coronavirus bill in the House and the one that went to the Senate. They threw it out. They threw this stuff out. We did dodge an enormous bullet. But the fact that it remains that they live to fight another day, and they always do. They never give up. So people can get discouraged. So my question is, Christian, and also for you, Hans, how can people help? What can they do? The average citizen is listening to this and just pulling their hair out to think about what happened with you guys in the commission, how you were undermined and sabotaged, and then to hear about all of this going on around the country. What is there anything people can do to stop this?
Boy, that's tough. The fact that they fail at the federal level just means they're now going to switch to trying to do this at the state level, trying to convince state legislators and local county officials to make all of these changes. And it's really important that people at the grassroots get involved and keep an eye on what their county commission government is doing, what their state legislators are doing, and be loud. Be very loud when they see proposals being made, bad proposals like the ones we're talking about, because believe me, that can make a difference.
Christian, what can people do?
Well, look, call their senators and say no federal takeover of elections. That's one, and that doesn't take very long. Pay attention. Hans is right. Volunteer to work the polls, do things to support organizations that have your back and have the American system of running elections in their sights, and just be vigilant. I mean, look, this is a guerrilla war. We're up against hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm not overstating that even by a bit. We're up against the entire power of the institutional left. When it came to the coronavirus bill, what is the number one priority of the left? It was to change how we do elections, because they think that gives them power. And if you care about taxes, if you care about life, if you care about religious liberty, understand the left thinks the gateway to get what they want on those issues is through how we run elections. And that should frighten you and mobilize you.
Let me just add a personal thing. With Christian's organization, Public Interest Legal Foundation, here he is, fighting away all over the country, fighting these cases in various courtrooms around the country. I don't know. I guess you take public donations, Christian, don't you?
Yeah, we're a 501c3, just like Heritage.
Yeah, well, we're going to put this on our Facebook page for people to support Public Interest Legal Foundation if they are so inclined. That's one thing they can do. The other thing that everyone can do that is voting age is vote. So many conservatives, and certainly Christian conservatives, don't bother to vote. And the last thing we want people to do is be discouraged from voting. They got to vote. That's one way they can stop this, right?
Right. Yeah, look, absolutely. Sandy, I got to tell you, I've run into this issue. I may have even gotten some calls when I posted your show before, sort of saying this. You folks, you have to deal in the world. You can't just turn it over, because they will transform the world around you in a way that snuffs out your ability to freely exercise. You cannot just sit back and put it in someone else's hands. You've got to be active soldiers, or else you lose all sorts of battles.
And particularly, look, elections in this country, particularly at the local level, where people sit on school boards and county commissions, and all kinds of decisions are made about your everyday life, those elections are decided by a handful of votes all the time. A couple of years ago, the Ohio Secretary of State listed the number of elections within, I think it was for a 3-year period, that had been decided by either a tie vote or one vote in Ohio, over 140 elections. And that is typical of states all over the country. So people need to get out and vote and get their friends and families out to vote, because believe me, that can make a difference.
It would be interesting to know if there are particularly, now you've mentioned Wisconsin, where they're trying to do away with voter ID by these mail-in ballots, I think in two different counties. So that's a heads up on that in Wisconsin. Those of you, I don't know what the counties are, but those of you listening in Wisconsin, you can find out in your local paper. They're covering it. I'm sure they are in some form or fashion. They may be covering it positively, but just know you can figure that out. But also, Mississippi, you talked, Christian, about what a vote harvesting situation they had. Now we know in Florida. Are there other hot spots that people can be watching for in their own states?
Well, Texas has the Rio Grande Valley where this occurs. All over Michigan, you have this problem. Philadelphia, I can't even begin to tell you how bad things are there. I mean, it's just a breakdown, frankly, as far as Philadelphia goes. I mean, Pennsylvania is enormously important. Hans, you might have some other ideas.
Well, what's very clear is that liberal groups, their allies, are going to target the battleground states. You know, the states that they believe are places where there are close elections, could go either way in the upcoming election, and those are the states they're going to target by lobbying the state legislatures to change election laws and or filing lawsuits like they have in Wisconsin to get rid of the voter ID requirement and to take all kinds of other steps that they think will help them win elections. And that's what people need to be concerned about, because those rules they want in place, the only point of them is to make it easier to cheat and to give candidates and others the ability to manipulate election results.
And I just want to give a real worldview, a real example that would bring this home, and that's look what's happened to California. If you're conservative in California, you just you can't have a say at all. You're just shut out. I would say that's happened in my home state of Illinois as well. And you see the results of that. You see the bad governance. This stuff will affect your life. You cannot absent yourself from good citizenship without paying a terrible price. And while the other side is very busy, in fact, Hans and Christian, I know a lot of these things are going out. This is the second one I've seen. And here's just an example of what the left is doing. Breaking news. Amy Klobuchar introduces vote-by-mail bill to save the 2020 election. 20,000, they need sponsors. Then it goes on to say, polling places have been closed down across the country due to public health concerns, and in many states are still unsure about what their elections will look like. If polling locations remain closed until the 2020 presidential election, thousands of voters would have no way to cast their ballots. It would be a huge win for Donald Trump, exclamation point. So this is why we must pass Amy Klobuchar's vote-by-mail bill. So this is going out all over the country in various Senate and districts, whipping people up to vote for this change of vote-by-mail under the guise of taking out President Trump. I guess there's some truth to that, isn't it? If they vote for it, they will take him out, probably.
Well, they are interested not in making sure that every American who's eligible to vote is able to vote and their votes aren't diluted by cheating or administrative errors. Their interest is making sure they win, and that means getting everyone they can on their side to vote, even if they are, for example, non-citizens or felons or others who are ineligible to vote, because they don't care how they win as long as they win.
All right, Hans von Spakovsky, thank you for that sad note, but it's true, and it's the reality of what we're facing. And J. Christian Adams, you guys have a article coming out right away that's about the R Street debacle, I say scandal, and we'll post that on our Facebook page so that people can read it. Christian Adams and Hans von Spakovsky, guys, thank you so much for all you've done to try to pull this thing back, sometimes single-handedly. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.